You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I had an amazing conversation with Morgan Lander and SJ Jones about Kitty Pig. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers.
Hey everybody, hey yeah baby, are you ready? Whoa, whoa. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Get Tucked Podcast. I am your host, Tuck. It's been an insane year, but I feel reinvigorated and ready to podcast again, so thank you all for joining me if you are listening. Also, my dear friend Ian has teamed up with me to help me bring the show to YouTube as well, so very stoked to be doing it in a new way. You can check every week and watch it on YouTube if you want to just watch us be idiots instead of just listening to my voice. We've been recording some episodes over the last few months, and I'm really excited to finally share them with you guys. In Fit for a King news, we will be back on the road this fall for the Metalcore Dropouts Tour. The Devil Wears Prada and us will be rotating every night as headliners, and we'll be joined by Counterparts and Landmarks. I'm stoked. It's going to be sick. Also, if you've never listened to or seen Landmarks, band is absolutely fucking bonkers. They're so good. On our first episode back, we are joined by the one and only Jesse Cash. I've been wanting him to be the first guest back and purposefully waited until we could talk again. We recorded this chat a couple months back at the beginning of summer. It was right before we took off from the Motionless in This Moment tour. And I'm just such a fan of Jesse, his art, and his demeanor as a person. Over the years, we've been blessed with the opportunity to tour with a lot of people and meet a lot of individuals, but I really think few are as authentic, genuine, and kind as Jesse. I really look at him with admiration because he's just so consistently great, and I think that you guys will definitely get a vibe from that with this chat. He's not just a good musician, he's a good person, and it's really lucky to get to have friends like that these days. I'm honored to have him on the show and can't wait to show you guys. So here we go. We're back, baby. Listen to it. Hope you enjoy it. Check out their latest single, Pale Iris, out now. Here we go. My conversation with Jesse Cash. I would say I'm prepared. I don't know if I'm prepared. Would you say I'm prepared, Jesse? We'll find out. Well, here we go. It's begun. I'm back, baby. I took a break because my brain was fried because my band went on tour for 6 months, and it hurts when you do that mentally and physically. And currently, I am down 5 pounds, and my podcast is alive again. So, hi, Jesse. Jesse Cash, the man, the myth.
Hello, Tuck.
How are you?
I am good. You look great.
Thanks. You look great. You have a haircut since the last time I saw you. It's pretty crazy.
That means that we haven't seen each other in a while because I've had this haircut for, like, 6 months or something.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen you since we went on tour together.
That's maybe crazy. That sounds like a lie, but I'm going to choose to believe you. I'm making a choice to trust you, even though my better judgment says that you're a liar.
Well, you're right. I feel like I got that whole Jim Carrey liar liar thing going on sometimes where I'm a little bit too honest and it gets me in trouble, but maybe it's just being dumb, and that's okay too. I feel like we've just been on tour so much, both our bands, since we were originally, where we were just like in recovery mode for 2 years, to be like, wow, we didn't do anything for 2 years, so let's just tour for 2 years straight. Maybe you don't feel the same because you get to tour with Bad Omens and that's different, but I would say that it's been a lot. Oh dude, you know what, hold on 1 second. Also, I forgot to turn my air conditioner on.
You're a fool. You damned fool. I can't hear it, but Yeah, I believe you. Why not? It's good to keep that shit off during recording. Yeah, I mean, I like having a break lately. Like, it's weird having like such a long break before touring came back. You would think that we would just want to like keep going, but I kind of enjoy being home more. I think I figured out how to be home.
I agree, and I like being home way more than I did pre-pandemic.
I wasn't even going to say the P word.
I think that's a good idea, honestly. I used to call it the dark times when I talked about it more frequently, but yeah, I agree. It's been a little bit insane, but for you guys, super fruitful. I mean, your band has grown tremendously since that time period, I feel like. And because I feel like when we first came back, it was like the first time you guys were playing Snowblood and like the new songs. And ever since then, just been on this awesome upward trajectory, signing to Unified, all that kind of jazz. And it's been really cool to see, since I've known you guys for a long time and played with your band a bunch. How has it been for you guys from that perspective of like, kind of, have you seen the change for yourself? Is it something that like maybe you don't notice quite as much, or does it feel pretty gratifying?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you. I could say the same about you guys. I mean, kind of everyone right now is just like, everyone that we've come up with, it seems to be getting their due, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's doing really well.
Yeah. But, it's pretty wild.
But yeah, I mean, the tour you guys just did.
And thank you.
Insane. The production was so good, dude. I wish I could have actually seen a show in person.
We were pretty spoiled. Like, the lighting package was incredible. And then we also had Anthony, who he works primarily currently for Pierce the Veil, like doing media with them. And he designed all the show that went with the panels and stuff. And they just gave it a lot of love. And I think that they haven't done it a lot, and that pushed them to go even harder on it. And then we got to have Anthony out with us on tour doing media. So that combo was pretty incredible. We felt very spoiled because he's, like I said, always with Pierce. Like, we're no Pierce the Veil. So, and the Used, the dude's a nut. But thank you for saying that. We're super stoked on it. And I like getting to finally do production was just so cool. We've never really headlined big shows, because last time we did, it didn't like work out as well. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to figure more out. I want pyro though.
Yeah. That's the unicorn of cool production.
Right. I want to be outside at some European festival with monster sized pyro, and then to be like, Gojira is playing next. Something like that. That would be pretty cool. And then I'd be Lorna Shore, because they're doing that right now, and that's also insane.
We did a confetti blast in London, and I was just like, we've done it, god damn it.
That's awesome. You took over. It's you. You're the king now. Yeah, that's honestly, confetti blast is pretty cool.
I love them. We toured with Beartooth and they did a confetti blast every night.
I like that.
People just like love confetti. Like they like just like the increase in the ooh is nuts when it happens. I was like, yeah, I want that. So we did one of those, and now that's the thing when you like up production is like you have to just like keep doing it, because then people are like, the last time they were here, they had more, and it's like, well, fuck, right? You're always gonna want more, and it's like, yes. And so do I. Fire,
and you always
baby.
Hear Give of pyro. Like, I remember, you know, like hearing about bands that spend like most of their tour income on production in order to create that and to like hype people and to want to bring them in. And, you know, touring has always been such a breadwinner for us always, that I can't imagine spending all of it on production. But at the same time, that's got to be what, you know, helps a band to elevate to that level. Like, doing super crazy pyro and stuff. Plus, shout out Beartooth. They're in yellow mode now. They've changed it up. They've shifted colors. He wears Brain Dead. It's sick. I recently, Brain Dead, the shirt that he's wearing, I love that company because they do magic collabs, like officially licensed ones. So I actually just bought two Brain Dead shirts recently. But they're not as cool as his. They have magic cards on them. So it's pretty neat for me, which, you know, I like. Ever since that tour, I've been heavily addicted. I've lost my life to magic thanks to Alex. It's terrible.
I will never get into that, but Godspeed.
You shouldn't. It's smart to not, because it's bad for you.
It's almost like sound engineering. It's like, at a certain point, like, you've missed so much learning curve. Like, I'm not going to become a master sound engineer at this point, and I'm not going to get into magic. And
learn, you might, just because you have good taste. And I feel like that's such a big part of it now, where things are becoming...
Engineering or magic?
Engineering. I mean, magic, I mean, I just watched it. It's similar in a sense, where I just watched a tremendous amount of YouTube.
Yeah.
And I mean, spent way too much time on it and money.
I think I've gotten as far with it as I need to. Like, I can record my own pre-production at this point, which is like all that I need. And then,
and you can write all your silly drums and stuff. And
for the longest time, I couldn't write drums. Like, I just did not understand what drums were. And then I realized that I just hadn't tried it. And then we did those covers on the deluxe, of our self-titled. We did three covers, and I just like copied the drums over from
the covers. It was like a Muse cover, right?
Yeah, Muse, Audio Slave, and Nine Inch Nails.
Sick.
And I just kind of copied what the originals did, and then I was like, oh, I think I understand drums. So now I write drums to my free pro, but they're like shitty drums. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I always have to remember, like, oh wait, I should change the cymbal up. It's just like little like learning curve things, because I just have never even messed with them or tried to do drums before. But, you know, then Alex will just make them a real drummer's drums based on my that simple little sense. Beats.
But that's my next task in life now. That, so I felt like for a while I was done learning, and the way that we've spoken feeling about both these things is definitely how I originally felt about magic, because my best friends at home, Evan and Devin, they've both played magic for like 20 years. And I was like, dude, I'm not going to get into this. It's so much to learn, like, insane. And that was like 10 years ago, 10, maybe even more. And now I just like was so excited about it after learning some on tour that I just really got into it, right? And then it really struck me where I was like, oh, I need to, we'd made it. I'm not done learning. I just wasn't interested in something for a while. And now my challenge is to like learn how to play, like make MIDI drums well. Cause everyone else in my band is so good at making demos. Like, between Trey, Dan, and Bob, like, they're all awesome. Like, Dan is a professional engineer. Like, he does records. So it's a lot, like, being around guys that are that skilled, it definitely can be daunting at times. But luckily, they're really patient with me.
That's, like, why I like living with, like, Mike and Noah, because they're just so comfortable in Logic. It's the reason why I got Logic, because...
Who's Mike?
If I have any questions, if I'm confused about something, I can just be like, hey, why don't you guys just show me this? And they're like, there you go. And then in 2 seconds, I know how to do it forever, versus like going down the rabbit hole of watching an hour long YouTube video, like, you know, swiping through the video, trying to find the timestamp to where you get the answer you need. Like, I mean, that works too, but I'm just so ADHD and like not patient with that sort of thing. So I kind of need to put myself in situations to where I can like pick up firsthand information from people who that's the thing. Just I need to be next to the people who can be
well
like,
you do live you with do the number four that. Rock producer in the country.
What?
You live with the current number four rock producer in the country.
Is he? Where's this line?
So there's a separate Billboard chart for producers, not just the songs themselves. And I think it was like a week ago, it was posted that him and I don't know the guitar player's name, Joa, maybe?
Jolly.
Jolly?
Yeah.
They were both on there. It was like both of them were like number four, number four, number four, number five or something.
Nice. Who's 3-2-1?
I don't remember at the time. I just was so like, holy crow, like that's crazy. Because it seems like, you know, I had heard that they did everything themselves. And I think that's such an inspiration for a lot of artists out there where they need to put more time and more love into their craft and maybe they'll yield better results out of it. And I know that's certainly been inspirational for myself included.
I think it's good for me also to be around it. Cause I definitely feel like I do more and care more about learning new things.
You're living with a moment in time. Like it's, you know, we're both seeing new successes for sure. Like our bands are doing much better, but the thing that they're going through right now is crazy. Like, you know, they might come out the other end, like the biggest band in rock. Like, yeah. You know,
also we should probably point out, we're talking about Bad Omens and Noah.
I feel like at this point you can say him. Noah and people know. I don't really think it's like that word, but with returning back to podcasting in general, I'll try to clarify. Yes, we're talking about the sexiest man on People Magazine's hot bod Noah guy, Noah Sebash.
Yeah, it's cool to see. I'm happy for him. It's pretty dope. And I remember when they were working on their record whenever I first moved out here like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It was like pretty clear that it was going to make a splash. Obviously the splash is bigger than I guess one could imagine unless you've actually been there and seen the thing that you would imagine, but since it's like kind of ramped up, it's not really surprising. I'm just like, yeah, I mean, you wrote a good record, but like, this is kind of what happens. That's why I think it was Matt Anderson. You guys, he still books you guys, right?
Yes, sir.
I think it was him that said, like, he said to me, like, we like had some random meeting like 10 years ago. And he said, it starts and ends with the music, which maybe like a lot of people say that, I don't know, but he was the first person I heard say that. And I was like,
yeah,
damn, that's like one of those things that I'm going to think about all the time forever now.
Yeah.
And it is, it's just like, cause people get in the weeds of thinking about, you know, like what's trending on Octane Radio or what do the people want to hear? It's like, who gives a fuck? Like just write what you like to write and it'll catch on. I mean, I'm not saying like, I shouldn't say who gives a fuck. Cause it's like, yeah, you want to make music people like, but if it's like honest and it's what you want to do, like that's just going to happen. It's going to translate. Great example is like Sleep Token. Like there's nothing straightforward about a band like Sleep Token, and they're huge. They're probably like the next band down from like popularity in the genre, like after Bad Omens. Like it's pretty crazy to see what's happening to Sleep Token, and they're writing like 6-minute songs with like jazz outros and shit. So it's like, yeah, anyone who says like there's a certain way you're supposed to write music to like garner a fan base is just, I just immediately don't trust them, and I kind of never have.
Agreed. And you know, like a few things for that one. Did you see that Daughtry covered Sleep Token?
That's crazy.
Stated Scene posted it, and he does Chokehold, and it sounds incredible. Just him in an acoustic. Whole packed ass room doing it. Incredible.
Wow.
And I agree with you. The thing that Matt said, you know, I talk to people about that all the time where I very much agree. And it's something that I feel like more people need to embrace. Dayseeker is a really good example of that. I think like, you know, you could say like a Snowblood or like When Everything Means Nothing and like stuff like that. These moments where you don't really, I feel like you're not trying to shoot for anything. You just make something real. And with that provides you a success that you couldn't necessarily manufacture another way. And it's just giving that like real honest to God truth that you have, like, and it's rare. It is, because we all get competitive in the sense of you see what's popping. You see, like, okay, everyone, you know, really, you know, copied Bring Me for like a long time. And it's funny because I would say the early Bad Omens definitely sounded very Bring Me influenced. But now I feel like they're going to be that thing that now people are going to copy. And
I mean, it's already happening. Like, I'm already hearing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sleep Token, I just don't know if you could copy, but the Sleep Token thing, you know, and I guess both bands,
if you
really
try. If someone tried, I mean, people would see right through it. But I mean, maybe they won't care if you copy good enough. I won't name
you
bands,
got me now. Turn around. I'm gonna sing like that now. I'm gonna sing like Creed, but in Sleep Token
instrumentals.
I'm the singer of Sleep Token. No one knows.
I fucking knew it.
I'm Vessels.
Vessel.
Yeah. No, I love that band. They're sick. I wish though, but I don't wish because I'm me. I don't want to be anybody else. All right. Done talking about other stupid fucking bands. Talk about your band.
All right.
So last thing about like Snowblood was, I feel like that was the track that really, solidified like the marriage between like you and JT and like figuring out like the best way to balance that good cop, bad cop, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead. Not you.
That song's funny. Like, it's funny that that is the biggest one at the moment, because it's, like what we were just talking about, it kind of goes against anything, like, as far as like the structure you're supposed to abide by. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah,
it's sort of just a mess of a song.
But I think that's why I like it. It catches me off guard at times, but all of it's very catchy and rhythmic.
Yeah,
it's like tech for dummies. You know, I can always still
do it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it just has this natural rhythm to it that makes you want to have fun. Like, even when you're having your techier moments, like going into like that last chorus section and stuff, but I don't know, I'm a big fan. I like that song a lot. Talked about that song a lot over time.
Thanks.
But latest single, Pull From The Ghost, very stuck in my head, and brilliant. I think is a better version of that marriage, where I feel like that was like figuring it out like in the newest best way at that time. And then now the way that you guys balance the chorus, and when he does the like pitch yelled Pull From The Ghost, it's so sick. What were you saying?
That one I've never quite figured out like where I stand on it. I'm on it, like
the
like,
song like itself.
I like the song. I mean, for
was
sure
it,
because at the time that we were like trying to come up with a single, I had a massive pool of ideas that I was, you know, that I've been developing for months, and that one was written like within a month of going into the studio. It was kind of like a little extra song, so I kind of started from scratch with it, but I was just like so into it that I was just like, I'm just gonna nurture this idea, and this is the single, like so everything else that I had, I guess I'm just gonna save for the next record. But I think because it just felt, maybe people don't agree with this, but for me it felt like a little bit of a departure, just in that it was like straightforward.
Yeah, I thought like that's kind of, I thought it was going like it is structured and it is kind of straightforward, but that's why I liked it, where I felt like it was a nice like growth from Snowblood, where I was like, okay, there's some similar flavors here, but I think that this dish I actually enjoy more than this dish.
Yeah, I think my lean is more towards like the Pull From The Ghost kind of structure. Yeah. But again, like I don't want to like commit to necessarily, like I don't think we have to stick to that lane. Like, I feel totally comfortable continuing to write a song like Snowblood for a record, but I think you kind of see that on that record in particular. You know, there's songs that don't necessarily have to, they can kind of just stand on their own as their own thing. Like, I'm not too interested in like a thematic record, you know, like there's Snowblood, but then Divisionary is like way more quote unquote straightforward. The last song is like mostly piano and all singing. So it's like I think our band will operate best if we don't think too much about how a song is supposed to sound and we just kind of do what we feel.
Yeah.
But I think that
kind of what Bob and I were talking about the other day. It's like not being worried to get weird. Like, doesn't yeah. really matter. Like, I think we did enough of like shooting for the hit. And I think now we know when and where to try to pull those punches, but in general, just have fun with it. Like,
yeah,
you know, Bob wrote a new song that doesn't necessarily have like a structure to it. It does have a big, heavy chorus, but it's dumb as fucking shit. And it sounds so stupid. And I love it. And I can't wait for everyone to hear it. And it just sounds like he's just having fun and not trying to like do anything in particular.
Yeah. I mean, and if you want to analyze what we were saying to not do earlier, like if you want to analyze like what's popular, like it's a good time to be experimental and kind of do whatever you want, because like a band like Knocked Loose is massive. No one would have anticipated something like that a few years ago.
Yeah.
But it is kind of funny.
Modern day.
It's funny to think that there will be a lot of bands who feel sort of like free to get a little weirder because of what's popular. Yeah. It's like, I mean, yeah, like.
No, what are you thinking? I agree with you. Yeah,
I'm thinking like, you know, like it takes like some bands that are sort of like trailblazing that mentality to allow other bands to be like, oh, that's what we'll do because it's popular now. But it's like, yeah, but those bands that got popular, like they got popular because they weren't trying to do that. They were just doing what they felt, and people picked up on that energy and they felt that there was authenticity to it, and that's why they followed it. Like, it wasn't like Knocked Loose. I don't believe that band set out to be anything, just like I don't believe Sleep Token was like, we have to write this kind of song. Like,
I agree.
People are just responding to bands being authentic and doing their thing. And I just,
you also want to be with that, like, authenticity. I think that what all those artists have is they're unique in their own pockets, where there's like a range of this, where there's the Brian Garrises and the Ollie Sykes and like these voices that are remarkably unique, stand out. You know exactly who it is the second you hear it, in the way that Bruno Mars and Adam Levine are, where one of the things that I think that helps that success is doing that, where having your own unique pocket within that kind of stuff, where I think for some of the older heads, like maybe like a Matt Honeycutt sounds like a like the dude from Bury Your Dead, Matt Brusso. And then maybe like you sound a little bit like a Cove Reber to like to us old heads. But I think that to the people that are now actually hearing our music, including like To Fit for a King and stuff like that, where I think that at times Kirby like reminds me of like Brooke Reeves a little bit. You have this moment where to all those people, because even in a sense, they don't even know anything about my band, as an example, beyond Dark Skies most of the time. And I feel like there's a lot of people who are holding these really cool, unique places within the scene right now, where we don't quite realize it. But when we were younger, and a lot of us, for example, we're like, we want to be like the Korns, and we want to be like Limp Bizkit, or they want to be like, you know, whatever said popular Slipknot metal band, right? But if you look at right now, the way that you would look at those moments, bands like I Prevail and Motionless and White have number one songs at Rock. Knocked Loose and Scowl are playing Coachella. Sleep Token, Bad Omens, and Spirit Box are like the biggest, hottest bands on the planet. Metalcore is new metal. Metalcore is now. Metalcore is active rock. Metalcore is the thing in that moment of time that will be remembered like a grunge or a hair metal or whatever. It's just different.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it because you're in it.
Speaking subjectively, I am just so glad that the kind of music that I think is cool, the kind of metal that I think is cool, is the metal that is the most popular right now.
Yes, I agree very much. It makes me very happy. Like, yeah, seeing Emotionless and White win, who is like, you know, like with an example, I loved like Bleeding Through and like early Atreyu and 18 Visions and all that kind of stuff, which awesome to see Atreyu is still also completely kicking ass. But that kind of stuff. And then seeing someone who also enjoyed that stuff, who's around my age, and then just like did it to the best, most maximum level. It's incredible. Like, so cool. And go see Fit for the Kings with Motionless and White in This Moment this summer on tour. You stupid fox.
Fits for the Kings.
Fits for the Kings. But yeah, it's crazy. We're lucky. We're lucky to get to like see it and be in it and live it at the moment. It's pretty cool. With the meaning behind Pull from the Ghost, is that kind of you writing about that time period in which we couldn't really do stuff, and now you were trying to like find maybe like inspiration and meaning in a moment when we were all feeling pretty lost?
Are you speaking lyrically?
Yeah.
Actually, that one doesn't... sometimes when you write lyrics for a song, sometimes the message is like... I feel like most of our lyrics are like pretty ambiguous, but sometimes people kind of see through to what the point of it is.
Yeah.
With little effort. The Visionary is a good example of that. Everyone kind of gets it. But that one... I feel like
I don't know which one's really... Divisionary. I'm so bad at names.
That's just
sing something for me, bro.
Your fans probably know what it is. It's just a song. It's just like one of the singles from the deluxe record.
Okay,
like one of the first singles we put out before the record came out. But I don't know. Just about us being addicted to our phones. But Pull from the Ghost. That one I don't think reads very obviously, maybe because it's so subjective, but no, that one's just kind of about my like weird perception of like love and relationships and like commitment issues. It's like a very like personal like me song. So but maybe I went so personal with it that it's like I don't know what the fuck this guy's talking about. But
you can get that. No, I have I have a song on the new My Side Projects record that's called Commitment Issues that I wrote some other people's commitment issues, not mine because I'm super committed. But
yeah, but the concept of Pull from the Ghost was like someone kidnapping a person and then letting them go.
Oh.
And like.
So kind of like you, but not like you. Like the show.
No, see, I probably already said like, oh, the show. You, I've never seen that show. No, like,
I just watched it recently.
I probably already like explained more than I should about it because of the way that I wrote it. Like, it wasn't like a straight.
No, you can leave
message.
It vague if you like, want. It's okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it is vague. There's no way to make it not vague because there's parts that I read and I'm like, I can't really remember exactly where I was going with this.
A lot of people may not know that you're such an avid reader as well, where I think you read more than anyone I've ever met on tour.
Oh, nice.
Except
for the only person Mike from the Devil Wears Prada, that guy reads like a madman. The guy reads like 50 books a year and he has great taste. We kind of read the same shit, I realized.
So but, you would say you have great taste in books.
I think so.
That's cool. What kind of stuff do you like to read?
I think I read pretty like well regarded. So like I'd like if I gave you a book recommendation, I would feel like you could trust me.
See, I just don't know if I could read it because I feel like sometimes I need a thesaurus when I'm going through your songs because I'm like, oh man, like
so one more thing I'll say about Pull from the Ghost is that it's just like I wrote it in a way to be like to where the focus was the story, and I kind of had my own relatability to the story concept of the song, but yeah, because it's not like straightforward and because it's written to be ambiguous and to kind of like take your own thing from it, it's like I can't even like pinpoint exactly what the hell I was talking about at times because it's just like very much of the moment I was writing it. But But as far as lyrics and reading, I've talked about this a lot, but your lyrics just like will get better if you read a lot, and not just like reading recreationally, but like, I mean, I do read because I love it, but it also like, I do kind of approach it like, I wouldn't call it work, but like, I'm paying attention. Like when I read a word that I don't know in a book, I write it down. I look it up and I write it down specifically. And I have this like long note of words that I've written down that I didn't know. And something about writing it down and then occasionally going back to that note better. And looking at the words, yeah. You kind of like, you just learn them intuitively. It's like when you hear them, I don't have to look it up anymore. I'm like, oh yeah, I know what that word means. And it just expands your vocabulary like genuinely versus what a lot of people do with writing lyrics to where you're just like Googling words and like looking up synonyms of big words to sound smarter.
Let me find the idioms that I need to put into my chorus.
I think that's totally normal to do that early into writing lyrics. Like I certainly did that, you know, on like the first couple of like albums or songs that I was writing, you know, like early bands and stuff. But I think if you're serious about it and you want to go beyond just like the stock lyrics, you know, you don't have to. A lot of people don't give a shit about the lyrics and they're not really expecting much out of lyrics. It's like the part that people think about the least. But to me, it's like it's part of the music, so I think it's important. And
I guess it depends on what you want out of your music as well, or what you're aiming for with your songs. Where
so reading helps that. like it helps you kind of find your own voice in your.
My
wife was important.
Super avid reader and reads constantly, and I agree. I don't do it. I've always been horrendous at it, like not just with sitting down and trying to do it, but even just doing it itself. But I'm certainly like, it's one of those things that I've been thinking about. So I just start like, at least this last like 2 years, I've been reading a lot of comic books, and it at least like taught me that I can enjoy it. I just need to not be such a piece of shit all the time and actually do it. I'll buy a book. I just don't fucking read it because I'm lazy and self-indulgent, and I'll just get high and not do it. But I should do it. My wife's smart. I like the way she speaks.
The thing about reading is like, you can't, it's so tough to get into because you can't force it. Cause like, you can passively like watch a television show or a movie and kind of zone in and out, but you can't do that with a book. Cause you'll just like, you'll literally miss it. Like your brain goes on autopilot, like when you're driving, you know, like you're so used to driving and you're thinking about other stuff. And then like, before you know it, you're like a couple miles down the road and you don't actually like have any image of what the last like couple miles have looked like. Reading's like that too, to where you'll be three pages in and you can't recollect anything that you've read. So like, you can't force it. And I think that I'm like, my attention span is like I think I have ADHD or some shit, but I was diagnosed with it like a few years ago, but like, I've been thinking about it a lot lately. Like, I'm like, is this getting worse? But things like reading are good for that because like, it's tough for me to get in the state to be able to focus. So like, there's like a real effort happening to where I can like really zero in on the book and not think about other things. So once I like hit that, it's like a small victory in itself. And it almost like does for me what I think meditation does, to where it just kind of puts you in the moment and in the thing that you're doing. And then because the content of what I'm reading, if I'm reading the right book, it'll just like, you know, I'm reading the words of someone who I look up to, or like someone who's like a really intelligent person and like has like a great message to spread. So it's like, you're getting like their input in the most intimate way, like their words, you're sitting with their words for hours and hours and hours. And you're also like, there's like a self-achievement of like, you know, investing in paying attention and focusing on what the message is. And it's just like the best education I've ever had. I didn't go to college or anything. So like, it's almost like my way of not dumbing myself down.
I don't think anyone's ever made reading sound more important, enjoyable, or necessary before. Like, especially as someone who, you know, in a way, you know, I don't necessarily as much as you, but like we write for a living as well as creators and songwriters and stuff like that. So like we should be sourcing new vocabulary. And I certainly see where I get very redundant in my rhyme schemes and stuff like that as well, where if I read poetry in general more frequently, I think that would be helpful as well. Where I think I was sharper at it when I was younger, just because I was reading it more frequently. But I think my life experience yields better content. So if I could be as sharp as I was then with the things that we've gone through now, I think I would write better songs. But well, in general, yeah. Go ahead.
There's that thing, like when you're writing lyrics, you're like, oh, what's the word I'm thinking of? Or like, what's the word for this? Or what's the word for that? Like that, those kind of things that you get hung up on, like, don't come as frequently, I've realized. Just the slow progression of like the result of reading a lot. Like, that's like one thing that I've noticed where I'm like, oh, like I don't have to like put as much time into that. I can put most of my thinking energy just into like the content of like the flow and stuff, because there's always a word like in my, or like Stephen King like calls it like the toolbox.
You're sharp.
He wrote a book about writing. It's called On Writing by Stephen King. It's really good. But he was talking about like a writer's toolbox of like, you know, that's just like your vocabulary. So you have more like things to plug in your disposal, which helps with rhymes, because you can come up with rhymes a lot easier, because, you know.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I used to practice freestyling all the time with my friend Evan, who I play with in my other project. He just plays piano. So, well, he plays drums in that band and piano, but amazing pianist. And I would always just like, I get out of work, go to his house, and I would just like hear him playing when I'm at the door. So that means just like, come on in. And he would just keep playing, and we would start just singing songs and freestyling stuff and trying to just like find new patterns, find new melodies, find new rhythms. Like, all, and it was such a good exercise that we were just doing to fuck around at the time. And I didn't realize what a good practice it was. But it's good for singing too. Find that pocket, you know, which is great. So one more thing that I wanted to talk about in regards to like era is kind of your relationship with UNFD. And I feel like there's a few bands that, like, you know, they brought in who, like Silverstein, for example, or you guys, feel like out of that pocket between like brand new bands nobody's heard of to the Silversteins, you guys were that band that was kind of in the middle with when you signed, but have been their greatest success since the launch of the company. Like, obviously they were an Australian establishment, but I would refer to this branch of the label as a whole new thing. And I was, shout out Francesca and Leander, super, super nice, awesome people over at UNFD. And I was just like thinking about, you know, their roster and stuff like that the other day, and I was like, yeah, I feel like Era has seen the greatest success with this company. And how's it been for you finally getting to, like, because the band previously was with Tragic Hero for a while, and at the time, like back when we were younger, like, cool ass fucking label, I had some cool bands. I thought if you asked me back when, I would have signed to Tragic Hero at the time when you signed to Tragic Hero, and I get it. They had some cool shit.
Yeah. Well, and then we're also now on Sumerian there in the middle too. I don't know if you remember that.
Wow. I did jump over that.
Have
you watched their talent show on YouTube?
No.
You got to go watch. Ash put together, like Kellen Quinn and Katie Babbs host it. Yeah. And it's like American Idol, but people and bands come and like try out, and then Alice Cooper is like honestly your shot, bro. And it's real cool. You should go watch it because it's fun. And there's also what was this show my friend Brian called me? Slap Fight or Super Slap or something? Hold on. You got to watch this shit too. It's ridiculous. Fuck. I'm going to wait real quick.
I'm going to talk about UNFD.
Okay, go ahead. But then you got to watch the slapping. It's incredible.
What is it? Slapping?
It's like UFC, but they slap each other. Power Slap! You got to watch Power Slap. It's a reality TV show that's like the Ultimate Fighter Championship for UFC, but it's dudes. They slap the shit out of each other, and then they're living in a house together, and they're like competing to be like the best slapper in the fucking world. And you got Dana White's trying to make it a new sport. You got to watch it. It's awesome! Power Slap.
This is just not the kind of TV I watch, Tuck.
I only watch documentaries, and but murder docs, like murder porn stuff all the time, because it makes me feel good. And great.
The most, like, my peak of reality TV is the Great British Baking Show.
Well, that's an amazing show.
I love that show. I can handle that kind of reality TV because it just makes me feel good.
Yeah,
everyone's nice, and like even when they're like criticizing the cakes, it's just like, I don't know, everyone's like pretty well intentioned. I'm just like, this is what I need. Like, after I got my wisdom teeth removed, I was like, I just need to feel nice, and I put on that show, and it completely like scratched that itch. And that's the only thing I will ever need reality TV for. Like, beyond that,
there's a show called Next in Fashion. It's on like.
Yeah, see, that's just not
Netflix
my thing.
As well. No, but it's kind of like that, but for fashion.
And that one's got Tan France, right?
Yes.
I love that.
It's awesome. It's not, and like that thing, it was one of the shows like my wife put on. I occasionally watch like those kinds of shows with her. And I got really into it. I was like, no, like I'm going to keep watching. Like, this is sick.
It was a feel good. Tan's my favorite.
Tremendous host.
Favorite person.
Amazing.
On Queer Eye.
Yeah.
But
I love Jonathan too, though. I love all of them. Love that show.
But if we want to, I will just say this about UNFD. They're great.
Yeah.
Francesca's the best. Heather's great. It's awesome. I guess I don't have much more.
No, it's okay. They're super nice. They let you do what you want. You get to make great records. Who did you do Pull from the Ghost with?
Carson and Grant. Atrium Audio, who also did the deluxe record.
You did the record with them in general, right? The self-titled. I enjoyed the mix on that song, and I thought that I really liked the production at the beginning of the song. That was super cool. It was fun.
Thanks.
I enjoyed it. So I want to ask you some Ghost House stuff too.
Okay. Yeah, actually kind of a good time to talk about that finally. I finally like have.
Are you gonna finally release some stuff? Like, it's been since 2019. Long time.
Yeah. Well, it's been 2 years. Which is still a lot, but it's like coming up on 2 years now pretty soon.
What'd you put out? I thought the last thing was the sleep therapy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That was the last thing I put out. Yeah, I've been working on this record for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of people are just like people that are aware of Ghost Dallas. Have asked me like you know, basically what is going on, like how, like where is this record. The honest reason why it's just been so delayed is just that I've obviously been busy with Era, and I think I get overwhelmed by a lot of things going on, and just like I haven't like allowed the space to think about rolling the record out, which is on me. But that,
well, you do
seems
it all yourself,
be,
right?
We seem to be on track here. Yeah. Like for the most part, depending on.
Do you use like a distro or like Blood Blast or any, like, who do you put the record?
I haven't done
with?
In the past. I've done nothing. This time around, that's not going to be the case because you kind of have to ask. This is actually a good thing we could talk about because I have done independent for that project forever, and it's cool. Like, it's sweet to just like. You know, I don't know, like Yeah, it's just like really nice to have like an independent
release. Dude, having, I can only imagine, I mean, owning those, like you own all the Ghost Atlas songs, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool, especially like when you guys stream really well.
Yeah. And like that was, that worked for me for a long time because I always had Era as kind of the, you know, like Era always ran in a traditional way on a label.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was cool to have it was cool to kind of have both because I could like use the good parts about being on a label for Era would just kind of like help grow my own name and therefore slowly grow Ghost Alice. So that was like helpful. But at this point though, like because you know, Era has more going on than ever. And I've just seen the way I've like taken like too much time and I've kind of delayed a lot of the process over the last 2 years with this record because I've been busy with Era. I think it just like kind of required me having an honest conversation with myself and just saying like, what is more worth it to me? Is it worth it to continue to be independent and do it on my own? Or like, is there something to be said about allowing help from people that I trust to roll this thing out in a way that would be way better than I could do on my own. Sharp Tone
Records this fall.
But yeah, so this time around, I'm just like, all right, like I think that I care more about people just hearing this record and it getting to people and it being promoted properly. That's more important to me than hoarding it all to myself. Like that. So my priorities have just changed around that band. So, and that's been kind of part of the delay too, is just figuring out how I do that, like who puts the record out, like who I want to
now
work with to do that. But now things are like moving, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense where you have a lot of the catalog. Now, obviously, like say you sign to a label, they are going to be like, hey, can I buy your back catalog? I think your band is great. And they may have or may not have approached it. It seems like you probably were like, nah, B, don't touch it. But taking help on doing this record sounds great. I guess you can't really talk about if UNFD had primary rights to it from your Era contract or not. But I can't wait to hear it. Yeah.
I've always like worked out
to have independence.
I've always worked it out. Like Sumerian was like really cool about this also, like just like having it separate, you know, having it as a separate thing, which I think like all well, yeah, I mean it seems like one of those things that should be talked about with every deal. Like if you have like a second band, like something that should be discussed between the artist.
Yeah.
The band being signed and the label is like, what do we do with these side projects?
Well, and that's why.
So it's just like, something I've always been conscious of talking about.
Yeah. That's why like with my side project, especially at the time when I started it, where for those listening, if they do or do not know, I have another band called Offroad Minivan with an album called Swan Dive that's out. And I have new stuff that I'm starting to release next week, actually. And when we made the project, you know, Tooth, Solid State Tooth and Nail had offered. And I was just like, yeah, like I would love the help. Like I don't have to worry about anything. That sounds great. And it depends on what you want out of the project. We're obviously like owning masters is awesome. And I think it should definitely be encouraged for people. But at that time I was like, you know, engaged and young and not having a lot of money. And it wasn't really the time for me to be like, I'm going to spend $5,000 on a record or something. So, I've loved the assistance with the project cause it's let me, keep it my art project kind of like I can do all the things that I want in the way that I want in a time span that I want and never feel rushed. Where like Fit is always like every 18 months you got to put out a fucking record, otherwise your band sucks.
Right, and it can feel like sort of a superpower to just sort of like not really care what happens to the band, or like not really care if like you get a huge fan base. It's just like, well, I care that I have a thing that is completely my own thing, and I can just do whatever I want with it. Like that's where the freedom came in. That's where the value came in.
It's had great consistent growth over the years, though. You know, and I like. Through like your streaming and stuff, like definitely a lot more people have heard about it. But I think that in a way that because you don't do a ton with it, that makes people yearn for it even more, where they're like, yeah, when is Jesse gonna fucking play this shit? Like,
yeah, and I've talked for years about legitimizing the project, and I think with this record, it's like, okay, I can talk about that for as long as I want, but it's never really gonna be legitimized unless I properly roll this thing out. Like, so yeah, I want people to be able to buy vinyl, like physical in general, you know, and yeah, I don't want like a huge machine behind it, but just like a couple people that I trust who like I know will do a great job by it. That's which is what I have now, like in order to put the record out the way I want to.
So we'll have some announcements kind of soonish, you'd say.
Soonish
about Ghost Atlas.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, I'm like so timid to promise timeline things because you always betray them and you're always wrong and you're like, fuck, I thought it would be out by now. I'm sorry. Like,
knowing that there will be something in the future is nice. That's enough for me. So
the kind of the things that needed to happen to sort of get the ball rolling are rolling. So now I feel like we're about to, I feel like there's a snowball effect on the horizon of like actually waking up one day and being like, oh my God, my new song is finally on the internet. People can finally hear it after 4 years. So yeah, it's rolling. I love the record. Very excited about it. You have to send me some of your new Swan Dive stuff.
Will do. Yeah, I will send it over. I'm very excited. It was fun to, in a similar sense, like not feel pressured where I just wrote until I felt like it was done. And then was like, okay, like I'll go to a studio, make this now. Like all the demos.
When did you change the name?
Oh no, it is called Offroad Minivan. The album was called Swan Dive. So I branded a lot of the stuff from that record with that name just because I think it's cool. And Offroad Minivan is a bad band name.
That's what I mean. I thought it was like a funny tongue in cheek name, but then when you, I thought earlier in this conversation, you said you changed it to Swan Dive. And I was like, I could see why given like,
I considered it actually, and I talked to the label about it and they were opposed to it. And so maybe that's some of the things that like when you're independent, you can do or not, but that's what the name is supposed to be very,
I think it's fun. I like it. I just misheard you earlier and I was like, oh, I didn't realize you changed the name.
Yeah, no, it is a, you know, kind of especially going off that first record, because basically all the songs on the first record are true stories about people from around my hometown and where I grew up and stuff. And the name kind of pairs with one of the songs, Taconic, where if you go on Amazon and you watch a documentary called There's Something Wrong with Aunt Diane, there was this woman who, the whole family's over at this camp, does an overnighter, blah, blah, blah. And in the morning, everyone loads up with the kids, gets ready to go, and something happened. And she's seen in like a camera at this gas station. Then she goes the wrong way on the Taconic and causes a monster pile up. And when you think of the name Offroad Minivan, it sounds, you know, just kind of innocent. Maybe you think it's like some country band or some shit, but it's actually quite the tragic event. So you know,
I mean, it's funny you say that you wouldn't think it to be tragic, because I do associate that name with tragedy, and I think it's because we play music and we have toured extensively in a van, and we know the risk involved with that. Like, you know, obviously a lot of accidents have occurred in bands being on tour in vans. So like, I think my mental association with it is tragedy, because when I think about a van being off road, I think about all the potential,
you know,
things that could go wrong when we're out on tour.
I never thought about it in that sense. And that's got to be weird, because I obviously like, yeah, we're in bands and that makes a lot of sense. But I think because the way that Spawn, I'm on the throughway with my wife and it's in standstill traffic, and a minivan goes like through over the meridian and like through the grass and stuff and up on the other side, and she just goes, look, it's an off-road minivan. And I was like, oh, that's my Jimmy Eat World, like that's it. And yeah, I was working on that song Taconic and like had all these songs starting to gather, and you know, it just kind of like all fell together in this way where I was like, I always wanted to be an art project first and foremost, where I feel like I'm just doing something that comes naturally from my soul rather than anything that's being manifested with like a purpose, because I don't expect anyone to ever actually like the band or to listen to it or to want us to play. Just make it because it makes me feel good.
I mean, yeah, I don't think that is the case, but I do think that principle going into making music,
yeah,
can be like a magical principle. I think really good stuff can happen.
The no fucks, if you will. But you played recently, kind of, with Ghost Atlas, where you got So did you go to Australia with the purpose of playing those shows, or were you out with Plot and then you guys played some solo shows while on the Plot New Tour?
Yeah.
Yeah. New Era. It was like a co-headliner, right?
No, Plot headlined.
Oh, okay.
And like, yeah, for the shows, I played Ghost Atlas sets and Landon played sets for his solo music, Landon Tours. And yeah, we were just like, we were already there. And someone had reached out to us from Australia and suggested that, well, you guys are already here playing Era Plot new shows. Like, what if you played some side project shows? And then Landon texted me and was like, that's not a bad idea. Do you want to do that? And I was like, okay, sure. And I have a hard time saying no to things. So
that's why you're here right now, Jesse.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, no. I've been trying to get here for a long time. You know that.
Well, but, yeah. I had said when I made my eventual return and had like video and stuff, I always wanted you to be the first guest back because I've wanted to do this interview for a long time as well. So thank you. But continue.
Yeah, I'm glad we're both home at the same time right now. That's a big thing. It's
about goddamn time.
Schedules crossing, but yeah, so we just did it for that reason. And yeah, that was like totally just for fun. I mean, it's like you said, like I haven't put on music in 4 years. I haven't put out a record in fucking over 5 years, which is absolutely psycho. Yeah, so it was like, yeah, sure. I mean, like, you know, the people who know what this project is will be stoked about it. And it's an excuse to be in Australia longer. So we were able to just like really enjoy at least the three major cities that you play when you go to Australia. Cause we got to go to those cities three separate times while we were there over the course of 2 weeks. So we got to like really spend a substantial amount of time in Melbourne, Brisbane and Sydney. And then had one day in Adelaide, one day in Perth. So like we got to like kind of just like feel more in Australia, which is sweet. I mean, we kind of got to do that the last time we were there too, which is really nice because
that's not an opportunity you get often. Awful.
What?
Just all the flying to play shows and, you know, early mornings in the airport and stuff. It was crazy when we went with Alpha Wolf.
Yeah, it's really tiring. And it kind of sneaks up to you as well because it's such a good experience and you're glad to be there. So you kind of feel that thing that you feel when things are going well and you feel guilty complaining about anything at that point because you're like, look at what I'm getting to do. But then you're like, yeah, but simultaneously I feel like really sad and lost. And then you got to kind of like put the pieces together and realize, oh, yeah. I feel sad and lost and depressed because this is a really wild schedule, like flying every single morning and going through
6 days airport security with 3 and hours like, sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. And checking that amount of bags. I always get anxiety at the bag drop with touring. Cause you have so many pieces of gear and you don't know if someone's going to be really cool about the amount of gear that you have. Like people who work at the airport, like sometimes they will charge you a lot of money for your bags. Sometimes they'll charge you no money. Sometimes they'll charge you a little bit of money, but like you kind of never know how it's going to go down or what that experience is going to look like. So doing it, like, I think we did it like 12 times over the course of 2 weeks. That's just
that's awful.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So I was like, I had these times where I was like, I don't know why I feel so like miserable because everything is going well, you know, because it's like, you know, I try to, it's like that poverty mindset, like growing up poor. It's like you don't want to complain as long as you're not in that situation. Like you know, like I always want to finish all my food and that kind of thing. So I'm just like, why do I feel so terrible? And I'm like, oh, getting no sleep. I'm flying a lot. I'm drinking every night. That's probably the biggest reason. And then I'm, you're just like filling yourself with all these stimulants to like stay energized. I'm drinking way more coffee than usual to stay awake. So I'm just like consuming, not resting, traveling, going through stressful situations, playing shows, interacting with people constantly, talking to fans, talking to the band, talking to people who work in the show. So it's like constant social interaction mixed with that. It's like all these things that are just like, and it's just like, oh, I'm depressed. I need time off. Yes. Need to go home and be a normal person for a little while.
That's how I felt at the end of the headliner, even though it was the best tour like in our career and it was amazing and I had like the best time ever. It wasn't that there's anything. It was probably the smoothest best tour in the history of our band.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at the end I was just so burnt where it took me the first week. I didn't talk to anybody. I sat in this room. I looked at my magic cards and organized them and that was it. I did that. Yeah. I hung out with my wife. That was it. And it was amazing. I needed it so bad because I was so burnt. Like 5 out of 6 months on tour will, you know, will do that to you. I was curious.
Yeah.
With those shows, who was the guitar player with you? Because I know Connor and Alex were playing drums and bass, but it looked like there was a guitar player that I didn't recognize playing guitar with you.
Yeah. It was Clint, who's been playing guitar for Era for.
Right. Now. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because we were the tour, our time over there was mostly about the Era Plot New shows.
Yeah.
So we were. Yeah. So we're.
You know, I haven't met him yet, but I've what a tremendous talent. The media that guy does is so cool.
Dude, he is. He probably gets embarrassed by the amount that we like brag on him, about him on camera, but I won't brag too hard, but I could say a lot of good things about Clint.
He seems tall, hot, capable, smart, and talented.
Yeah, very helpful. Builds our sets for tour and stuff, and just like he's just
he's a whiz. Valuable. It's awesome. Well, I can't wait to meet him. I'm super stoked. So last thing about Ghost Atlas, are you planning, I know you've done a U.S., I called a tour, right? The one with Aaron and Aaron Gillespie.
Yeah, and, it's been a few years, but.
Planning on doing anything?
If there's music, I don't want to tour anymore without new music.
Okay, cool.
So
maybe once also, this album finally mysteriously drops.
Yeah. I'll put the record out or like roll songs out and kind of go from there if there's like a cool opportunity or something. Main priority is just getting the music out there with that band. I really like the record. I really, really, really
will
like
you it. Send it to me? Can I listen to it?
You can. I will send it.
I to won't you. Give it to anybody. And I'll give you mine as well, even though I could probably get a couple bucks for the Ghost Atlas one. I could probably put like tweet right now and be like, hey, you motherfucks, who's got some Cash App? Hit me. I'll give you the Ghost Atlas stuff. Maybe yes, like see if State of the Scene wants to do an exclusive or something. That'd be pretty cool. But yeah, I won't leak your record. I just want to listen to it.
I don't think you'll leak it. I'll send it to you.
Okay. The only thing I'll leak is I'll pee when I get off this interview because peeing is healthy and everyone should do it. And that's a great way to close out this interview. Jesse, I am very thankful that you gave me this time. This has something that I've like talked about with you for a long time and absolutely admire and adore you. And I think you are the most talented motherfucker out there. And thanks. This was great. It's good. Feels good to be back. And I'm glad I got to do it with a friend. So appreciate you.
Dude, thanks. Adore is the word that I was going to use to describe you. I adore you.
And I'll always remember you flipping that ping pong table and watching the weed fly on my birthday and say, this is my guy right here. As you can probably think of countless times where I've been running around like a fucking idiot, screaming at everyone and being the most annoying person on any tour we've ever done together, but Maybe not that first one. I was pretty quiet on that first one because I didn't know anybody and I was trying to find my way. But dude, again,
I've never experienced you being quiet in my life, so I call bullshit on that.
Okay. Man, I think about the first time I'm sitting in, I forget where the green room was. It was like downstairs somewhere, and Alex had just gotten weed. And I didn't smoke weed in my band at that time. And he was like going, he was like, "Do you know how to roll?" And I was like, "Oh, bro, let me do this for you, please." And I got to roll him a joint, and that was the beginning of our friendship. And that was it. That's my story about Alex Blue for today. Alex, nice. If you listen to this or watch this, please make a commander deck and stop being a piece of shit so we can play. But that's it, Jesse. Love you, dude. Thank you so much. And hang on 1 second so I can properly say goodbye to you off the air. Thank you.
Love you. Thank you.
Between me eyes, so coins in the sky. I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.